I feel like a motherless child. Alone.
Though America has an African-American president now, the issue of race remains close by in the American narrative. It remains part of our economic, social, and political debates, and encountering racism and its history is a theme of American culture. But the idea of slavery and what that means, by comparison, is remote. The experience of enslavement and acceptance of it by some and rejection of it by others is difficult to evoke beyond the historical facts. So it is with a sense of wonder to see how poet and historian Kevin Young manages to take us on a journey to bridge the distance between now and the era of slavery in his new book about the Amistad Slave Revolt in 1839. The revolt and its aftermath, including the case that went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, is a window onto the slave and slave master culture of the 1800s. The book is Ardency, a chronicle of the Amistad Rebels. Kevin Young channels the voices and spirits of that time in a work that is part epic poem, part scrapbook, part prayer book. Young, with a kind of literary force of will, just brings this remote world alive. And he joins us from Atlanta, Georgia. Good morning, Kevin.
Morning.
What is it that you think or thought we all need to know as Americans about the Amistad rebellion? And then we'll get into just what a striking experience it is to read this book.
I guess I wanted to understand the pressures on the rebels themselves, not only mutinying at sea and freeing themselves from slavery, but also once they came to the land of the free, they were immediately thrown in jail, and the choice sort of offered them, or the offered by the legal system, was should they go back to the Spanish masters who had taken them, or their erstwhile masters, or should they go back to the sort of Coast Guard figures? There wasn't a Coast Guard yet, but who had found them. So, you know, that kind of choice between slavery and slavery was sort of facing them, and the freedom they demanded in these letters and what I turned into sort of song, I hope, really fascinated me, and I think speaks to the larger questions of faith and violence and in the English language, transformation, exile, all the sort of big questions for me that are at the heart of the American experience.
I mean, in a sense, this one event challenges, forces the question of what does it mean to be American?
Yes, that's right. I mean, were they American? They were here several years. They were always waiting to go home in some crucial way. And I was also interested in what's it mean to become an African-American. You know, they were African mostly from the Mende people. What's it mean in that moment? What moment did they become African-American?
And in this journey, and this book is a journey. It's a journey through religion, through racial identity, through national identity. Why did you construct it in the voices and pieces and artifacts that form, what is really, part poetry, part history, part pure curatorial kind of presentation of documents that are fascinating to look at? It's a curious and wonderful mix. And why did you choose to go in this direction?
Well, it sort of chose me. There was sort of no other way to tell the story, I felt. And I first came to the story, 20 years ago when I came across the Amistad's letters from jail in New Haven, and I was so struck by the power of the language, the things they were saying, the things they weren't able to say, both because the language was new to them, but mostly because they couldn't. They were in jail writing to President Tyler asking for their freedom. What a powerful moment in American history, and I thought it also took a certain amount of bravado to do that, and I really admire that. And it's sort of translated into what I think of as song. In many ways, the last section is a libretto sung by the leader of the rebellion, Sinque. But then, like you said, there's also these letters, the kind of primers that people in the 19th century would read. All that seemed to circle around them and be really important to telling their whole story.
Is religion a form of enslavement here, or is this mission to improve the Africans something that actually ends up doing what it intended?
That's a great question. I mean, I felt like I was as much interested in that question. I'm not sure I totally sought an answer, or at least the voices didn't. But I was interested in the way they created their own kind of liberation theology out of the religion they were taught. It was a simultaneous process, enslavement, imprisonment specifically, being taught English and also being converted to Christianity. That was all happening at the same time for them. And that, in a way, is a microcosm of African-American experience. And much like, say, the Negro spirituals, which have this powerful faith, this transcendence, but also have that liberation theology in them, that coding, telling you how to get out of here, I think really spoke to me from both sides, having grown up hearing those songs and living that life, as it were.
On page 83, where does this language come from? Choir Twilight, it's called. Let me read. And mercy and affliction and the journey, the rain, not the world, the water weighing down our clothes, not the sea, nor the chains, nor the ocean unending, nor the end, no, the sound of someone singing in the night and beyond, and the sparrow high above us, what my soul said to me, and the 10,000 and the years, and a time to gather stones together, and the dark that is itself a light. I mean, where does that come from?
If I knew, I could write it again. In many ways, your reading sort of points out some of the places. It comes from biblical sources. It comes from
the passage, the being on the ship, the water, the sands.
Yes, but and also this idea of the soul, the sparrow, a time to gather stones together. Those are sort of things both from the Bible and from the African-American reading of the Bible that I think the spirituals performed. But also just, I think it was, for me, I hope, channeling a kind of voice that was a kind of voice, primary voice, one that speaks to that voice in the wilderness.
Well, it's deeply evocative, and it's throughout this book. And I'm wondering if you ended up at the end of all this, and there's so much we could talk about here, feeling, because the narrative of race in the United States is all about proximity to the slave experience, about being not as far from it as we might think we are. But in this book, you get a sense that, in fact, the experience of being so enslaved, you come away feeling, is remote. Is something that happened, is something that's almost unimaginable, and that is where the power comes from.
Well, I definitely think, you know, the poet's job is to sort of imagine the unimaginable, and sometimes to present it as exactly that. You know, I wasn't trying exactly to recreate it, but I was trying to get at the feeling of it. And I say I, but so many of those poems are spoken in other voices, voices of a kind of chorus. I think of that poem you read as a kind of chorus or a choral poem, in that it's kind of an I, but it's speaking about a we. And there's so much of that in the book and so much of that in African-American song that it really came home for me in this one.
And it sings from beginning to end in that verse and all the amazing verses. The name of the book is Ardency, A Chronicle of the Amistad Rebels, written by Kevin Young. Kevin, thanks so much.
You can catch more of The Takeaway online at our website. We're looking ahead to the Oscar race with producer and co-host of the podcast Movie Date, Kristen Meinzer. You can check out The Takeaway blog, where she's following the news in the lead-up. That's at thetakeaway.org. And, of course, we've got the coverage and insight you need into the latest news from the Middle East. You can download our podcast dedicated to historic events there. It's called Wave of Change, and it's available at thetakeaway.org and on iTunes. I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
This is the greatest moment of my life.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.